our attention.
Well, good morning. It's good to be with you here again today with this group of people. Enjoyed your service so far. Enjoyed your singing. It's always fun for me to come here and just listen to this group sing. I think you do a good job, and the songs in your folder, obviously somebody has cared about the message and song and attempted to take it seriously, and I think you do well at your singing. I hope it's maybe not impertinent to comment on your Sunday school lesson on the thoughts of outreach and maybe in particular what Brother Steve was sharing there about the man, the serial killer there who was calling down the chaplain for his apathy and outreach and telling him, you know, he'd be willing to crawl on grass, a glass across the country if he really believed it. Is that our problem? We don't believe the message. I thought too, perhaps it's rather for us. We don't believe, we've fallen into the American or the Western trap of belief that nobody's lost. Just nobody lost. And so there's nobody to save. So there's nowhere to go. And if they name the name of Christ, that's good enough. And we have failed to recognize the call to obedience. And what the brother has shared in devotions, the fact that if a person is a Christian, there's a changed life. It makes a difference in how you live, in your conversation, and what you do about drunkenness, etc. And so perhaps our apathy is because nobody's lost. The neighbors are all right. The evangelicals are all right. The Catholics are all right. The Mormons are all right. The Buddhists, everybody's all right. You know, they just follow their way to God, however they find. Certainly not the testimony of doctrine and instruction in the New Testament. A straight gate in a narrow road. I've entitled the message this morning, The Will of God. The Will of God. And this message came to me primarily in because of the time I spent here yesterday there around the ideas of creation, and maybe especially I really enjoyed that, all of the talks, especially the one there that I thought of this morning in relation to Brother Morris's talk on the celestial message. And I have used his book as a springboard for this message. Previously, a number of months ago, I shared and I was intrigued by this idea, this book, and how it happened. My wife picked this book up a while ago, I don't know, maybe over a year ago, and I was busy there at home one evening, and one of the boys came to me with this book, and hey, Dad, look at this. Look what's going on here in this solar system. And so I looked at that particular, you know, scene there, and yeah, that was kind of neat. And a while later, he comes, hey, Dad, look at this. Jupiter, I had something like 63 moons. Wonder how they keep from bashing into each other up there. Yeah, you know that? Yeah, that's pretty neat. And a while later, he came back, hey, Dad, look at this. This Northern Lights and what all is going on. And about then I was like, hey Josh, when's my turn for the book? When do I get a turn? And I got my turn and I read late into the night all the things that they have in there. Beautiful pictures. And the Hubble telescope up there, and he referred to that yesterday. I found it fascinating. They picked a dark patch of the sky and they pointed that thing at it for some 11, some days, and they found out that there where it was dark, you know, it lit up with these galaxies, just a pinprick of light way over there, billions of stars in that dark patch. And, you know, they got that picture back, and it was a marvelous picture, what they had there. It was 11 days. So far away. So incredibly distant. It was brought out yesterday. And then the sheer amount of stars, innumerable, like the sand of the sea. And they quit counting. They just gave up. And to think, as was brought out yesterday, that is the will of God there. The will of God. We want to think about the will of God this morning. Will of God. And God did that. And God planned that. And God put those beautiful pictures out there. Those stars. The will of God. And He brings it down in Isaiah. It says, lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things? That bringeth out their host by number. He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of His might. For that He is strong in power, not one faileth. And so it's not random out there, and just going and farther and out there and more distant. And God did that on purpose. And He wanted that one there. And He named it. And He knew what it was. He knew what color it was. How big it was. Its perspective. Its implications to the stars around it. God did that. And we understand it was the will of God. You know, and in that picture, we can understand some things about God. We get the picture of incredible variation of options, just beyond our counting, beyond our comprehension, a God with that many variations. You think about infinite possibilities. Another thing we think about in that picture is we have a God who cares, is extremely detail oriented. A God who cares about the fine print and the finer print and down to the DNA like we heard yesterday and the code that's in there. A God that cares deeply about little things. And the third thing I see in that picture is that we have a God with a very specific will. The will of God. A God who has a lot of detail. A God who cares deeply about all the little things. And in life, if we don't, we ought to ask, what is God's will for me? What is God's will for me? This God that made all this. You know, and the centerpiece is man. And what is God's will for me here? And perhaps we feel, and maybe especially if you're a young person, you feel like, you know, what is God's will for me? You feel like you're standing out there in the ball diamond last night. Just all these options. And how am I supposed to know what to pick here? Which one is God's will for me? Do I get a red one or a green one or a close one or a far one? What does God want for me? And our choices in life feel that distant and that unknowable. All the choices. I think it's maybe fairly easy for us to accept that God does have a will for us. But the question then, does He have a more than just a generic will? Is He detail oriented when He cares, when he thinks about me and the direction He wants for my life? How much direction, how much detail does He want for me in His will? He thinks about me and my decision, what I am to do as I fit into His plan. Is there a will for me? What does God want of me? And does He have a specific will for me in every situation that I face? Does God have that? The answer to that question, at least in my mind, is sometimes yes and sometimes no. A very specific will. You know, And I've said this before, but the older I get, the more I realize how few of our choices in life truly are neutral, have no implications. How few truly have no implications spiritually. You know, and I don't suppose, you know, that we didn't have a very good cherry crop, so I didn't get to choose very much this year. You know, often we have a choice between Rainier or Bing cherries when we stop at the little stands along the road. And I like to do that instead of a lunch, 3 pounds of cherries. And I don't suppose God cares too much which of those two I choose, Rainier or Bing's. Or if you like Snickers bars or, you know, some other brand. But do you suppose that God cared which chair you chose here this morning in church when you walked in? You suppose that was just a neutral decision, your own volition, you choose. Do what you want. You know, perhaps it was. But if your choice of a seat this morning had something to do with some image you were trying to present, or some sister you were trying to avoid, of some situation you didn't want to get into, or some accountability you didn't want to embrace for yourself. You know, your choice of a seat this morning has eternal implications. And so the choices matter. And God cares. He's that kind of a God. We see it up there. And He's got a name for each one. And the choices matter. What is God's will for me? You know, life has as a way, in a way, life has a way of narrowing down our acceptable choices that we can say truly fit into God's will. You know, for me, you know, I'm a married man. I made a choice of the girl I wanted to marry and proceeded with that. And for me now, that choice is behind me. And we can say with confidence, God's will for me is to be married to her till death do us part. That is God's will for me. But it wasn't always so. Once I was in the position where God said to me, marry whosoever you will, but only in the Lord. And so the choice was a little bit different. And God's will for my life and marriage is a little bit different than it is now. It narrows down. It's just one of our choices. It's a very important one. As I go through life, how do I arrive at what God's will is for my life? What choices do I make that truly will encompass what God's will is for me? This God that cares about these stars and set this all up. So much detail. I'm going to look at a number of verses this morning about the will of God. Some ideas about the will of God. Ephesians 6, 5 and 8. As servants, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, and singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleases, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will doing service, as to the Lord and not to men. Knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. Finding the will of God has so very much to do with being willing to accept the will of God. If you really want to find it, you've got to be willing to accept it. Finding the will of God has very much to do with being sincere. It's really being sincere, what God wants from me. If you really want to know, you've got to be willing to accept it. You've got to be sincere. You know, we can look at the story of Balaam there. In Numbers 22, if you care to turn to that. This man. And you know the story, right? How this nation of Israel was beaten up on the neighborhood and they were perishing. And so what can we do? And this man, Balak, the king, sent to Balaam. This man, he thought he had a connection with God. And in verse 6 there at 22, he said, come curse me this people. Come make a difference. And then Balaam was faced with the choice What is God's will? See, what's God's will here? What does God want in this situation? In verse 22, we have it here. Verse 8, I'll start there. He said, and he said unto them, lodge here at Balaam talking. He said, lodge here this night, and I will bring word again, as the Lord shall speak unto me. And the princes of Moab abode with Balaam. And God came unto Balaam. And God was there, and he saw that. Got a detail. And what are these men that are here with you? What are they? And in verse 12, after Balaam was done explaining to God what God already knew, God comes out with this will of God. This is the will of God now in this situation. And God said unto Balaam, thou shalt not go with them. Thou shalt not curse the people, for they are blessed. You know, I'm not known to be, I suppose, a very ambiguous person. Maybe to my shame some days. I mean, that looks a pretty straightforward statement there to me when it concerned the will of God for Balaam. Don't go. And that's the will of God. Don't go. And we could go on with the story there. Verse 20 to 22. Now here the men were here again. Verse 19. And God came unto Balaam at night and said unto him, if the men come to call thee, rise up and go with them, but yet the word which I shall say unto thee, that shalt thou do. And Balaam rose up in the morning and saddled his ass and went with the princes of Moab. And the next statement's very interesting. And God's anger was kindled because he went. Hadn't he just told him to go? And you see, I think there's some very interesting things about the will of God in there. There's three principles that I'd like to emphasize about the will of God. If we're actually serious about following through with what God's will is for our life. Number one, we must actually be willingly obedient and accepting what God's will is. We must be sincere. And we must be following the will of God that we already know. If you're really going to move on in following the will of God, you must be embracing and living and confident in and willing to follow the will of God that you already know. See, that's the trap that Balaam got caught in here. Because God had said, thou shalt not go. Thou shalt not go. And now he's back and he's asking again. And should I go? Should I go? You know, if you're facing choices today, you know, I can't sit here and pick out which star is correct for you. But I think if you use those principles to guide you, I'd like to look at four passages as we think about how we embrace God's will for our lives. I'd like to just look at four passages in the Bible, just as by way of example. And I've chosen these because they specifically use the words, this is God's will for you. I'm going to look at four passages. And we think about, if you're confused in your life, you're not sure what to do or where to go, are you following through on these things? The first one is in 1 Thessalonians 5:18. What has this to say? In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. In everything give thanks. And how this works is we've got a God of detail, right? And he set them up there, the stars. And he called them all by their names. And he has a plan and a purpose and a color and a for these stars. And how is it with you? Have we accepted the fact that the circumstances that we are in were orchestrated by an all-knowing God? And He gave you those parents.
And He gave you this church. And He gave you that body. And He gave you that mind. And He gave you these leaders. It's the will of God. And here you are. And are you thankful? That's the question. If you cannot embrace with thanksgiving the circumstances that God has put you in, you have already missed a very important point of finding the will of God. Because God did that to you. And He's a God that cares deeply about the details. He's a God that cares deeply about your success. And are you thankful? And I think way too often our thankfulness is based on how we feel about our circumstances. And is it, yes, Lord, it's all right. It's okay. It's just fine for me to be right here in these circumstances with these people. It's okay. And are we thankful? You know, I'd like to make an observation here. Just, and this is personal opinion. You can take it and leave it as that. You know, I think that there's three things that sometimes we struggle with as people that have their roots deeply entwined in the failure in this area to be thankful about the circumstances God has put me in. Three things. One is selfishness. One is anger. And one is depression. And are you thankful? Or am I just frustrated with the situation I ended up in? Very thankful. The next passage I'd like to look at is 1 Peter 4:19. It says there, "Wherefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God, to them suffer according to the will of God, commit the keeping of their souls to Him in well-doing as unto a faithful Creator." Suffer according to the will of God. You mean that could be the will of God you're suffering? Could it? You know, it's like this little thankful circumstance thing that we had a little bit earlier here. But it's a lot worse. And now God has placed you in a position and called you to suffer for His glory. Do we accept that idea? That it may be God's will to call you to suffering. You know, this is different than reaping for what you sowed. For being dumb and getting in trouble for it. Different here. The Bible speaks, the New Testament speaks highly of enduring. God uses the endurance of His faithful people to bring glory to Him. In life, we face some hard times. And we must be prepared that it is the will of God to walk this path. Do we choose then to run from the suffering? To do everything we can to escape? Or does God want to use me and just send me to Nineveh like Jonah? You think about yourself in that position. And the suffering and the distasteful job and the hard work and the troubles. And I'm not going to Nineveh. And he ran away. Are you prepared to suffer? If you really want to find the will of God for your life, are you prepared to suffer? That is God's will. The next one I have here is 1 Thessalonians 4:3. It says, "For this is the will of God, even your sanctification,
that you should abstain from fornication. And the brother touched on this in devotions this morning. It is God's will that we abstain from sexual immorality in all its form. And temptation is very real. And the devil takes advantage of our natural desires. And our culture, you know, has made a god out of this. And they expect our participation in the worship of it. And where are we? And does our life represent the purity that God so clearly expects? And how can God show us further His will if we can't even find our will in His call for morality? You know, this is a very real battle that we each must face. We can take some deductions from this call to sanctification. One is that purity is possible. It is possible. He has called us to that. We can decide that we are living an impure life. We are outside the will of God. We have no basis to find His further direction. If we're going to be in the will of God, we must be victorious. You know, I just got a couple of things that I would say to you if you are struggling. Just a couple ideas to help. One is, be prepared to give up some legitimate things to maintain your purity. And perhaps you just can't handle it. And somebody else can. Legitimate things. Be willing to give that up. Be willing, be prepared to give up some independence. You know, I've told others, I don't mind telling you, I don't have the password for the restrictions on my phone. Because I've found that I can't handle it by myself. And so I give it to my wife. But with that, I want some independence, see? Now I'm not just on my own. You give that up. If you really want to be in the will of God, if you want to find your way, don't try to fight the battle alone. Another key is to stay active in the kingdom. Activity has been, for all our disdain for busyness, some days I think that idleness is still the devil's workshop. And to be busy and active is an antidote to temptation. So we think that this purity is the will of God. We have seen this. It is the will of God. And so you can take that principle and it will tell you what books to read, what music to listen to, what your level of participation in social media must be. Because if purity is the will of God, how then do we justify filling our minds with the music, the books, and the movies of impurity? The last one I have here is 1 Peter 2:15, where it says this, "For so is the will of God, that with well-doing you put to silence the ignorance of foolish men." And it is God's will for you, God's will for me, that we are to live our lives in such a way that those that are antagonistic to the gospel look at our life and they can find nothing evil to say about us. Because your well-doing puts them to silence. Because they just live so holy. That is the will of God for you, that your well-doing is the silencing factor of that antagonism to God as it comes to His people. Your well-doing, to live that way. And you know, that gets pretty real. That gets pretty real. Your well-doing. Now, I can just tell one story on myself. I can't remember if I shared this here before or not. I shared it other places. But I moved up there to Walla Walla 7-8 years ago now, and we got a little farm there, a couple hundred acres, and because I was used to it, I said I was going to grow some grass for seed up there, and the only Well, the guy in the valley that's doing that, and so it is, you know, the neighbors drive by and wonder what is going on that farm. And, you know, I come from the Willamette Valley, and I was used to the intensity here and the way they farm. And I just wish those guys up there would make their fields as smooth as you do here, because it sure make my life a lot easier. And I like how the ditches are sprayed out and the grass grows nice all the way to the edge of the field. And it's not quite the intensity over there. And so I was used to that. I was going to try to do some stuff, but we got to irrigate up there, right? To make it work, to keep the grass alive. And so I planted the grass all the way to the neighbor's lane. And I worked the ground down nice and I started irrigating. I'm going to keep this stuff alive. And it was, does God care about all this? Does this have anything to do with the will of God for me? And so here I am irrigating, and you know, I use a big gun irrigation, and the wind blows up there, and if you pull that thing out, and if you don't get it far enough, you have dry spots. And so I was making it plenty far. And I was getting the neighbor's lane wet. And I kept getting the neighbor's lane wet. And one day I went down there to the change my irrigation, and the neighbor lady came out. And she had somewhat to say about what I was doing there. But the thing that was sobering to me is, and here you are, she's saying this kind of stuff. Here you are in this outreach, and here you claim to be a Christian, and here you're doing all this stuff. You're a good guy, right? And yet you're just soaking my lane down every morning. And, you know, I didn't feel very big. And I stopped watering the lane. Adjusted my life. Because she expected more out of me. And how could I be so infringing on her? And taking advantage of her. And here I was with all this baggage of my Christianity, and yet I was acting like this. But the problem is, you see, they farm too. On the other side of the lane. And the lane's not very wide. And they have irrigation too. And they soak the lane down all the time. And so there I was in a position watching them do something. And yet calling me down. And I must conclude that it was the life, the Christian life. She was expecting so much more of me. And it was the what I stood for and was calling her to that was offensive. Because she was willing to do it. But oh no, not me. Nevertheless, I adjusted my life. The ignorance of foolish man. Adjust my life. That is the will of God. Adjust my life. For the foolish neighbors. That is God's will. That you live your life in such a way that you put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. You know, that affects us so many ways. And they know who you are. And they know who I am. Now they're getting more and more used to it. And some of your guys were into the restaurant the other night. And you know, some of the way the vehicles are driven. You know, what do you say? Because it is the will of God that your well-doing puts to silence very practical ways as you interact with your neighborhood. So we've looked at four general principles for the tracing the will of God in your life. It's God that cares about these stars. A God of detail. Everything matters to Him. Everything matters. Are you thankful? Are you willing to suffer? Are you willing to cut off things that compromise your purity? Do the actions that I live, my conversation, as the Bible calls it, does my conversation result in a compromise of my Christian witness. You know, I chose these four things, the Bible, these four passages, because they specifically use the words, "This is the will of God for you." But you know, the rest of it is too. All of it that doesn't use those words, "This is the will of God." This is the commandments of God. And where is our obedience to this word? And as you decide what God's will is for you, as you walk close to the word, you will find that it just constrains all those choices. And it becomes not just a host, a multitude of anything goes. The Bible constrains you. And you'll find it becomes a straight gate, a narrow way to the will of God. Thank you for your attention.
Have a song.